Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for March of 2020. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be interest to everyone. Days to Remember in March begin with National Nutrition Month on the 1st. The Star Spangled Banner was made our national anthem on March 3rd, 1931. Daylight saving time begins on the 8th. Set your clocks ahead an hour. The Jewish observance of Purim begins on the 9th. The Girl Scouts of America celebrate their birthday on the 12th. St. Patrick's Day is the 17th, and spring begins on the 19th. The 29th is National Vietnam War Veterans Day. March is a busy month. The March 2020 issue of Consumer Reports magazine discussed a problem many have with fresh salad greens. When Carolyn Graham ordered a garden salad at a pizza restaurant near her hometown of Loomis, California, on a weekday night in April of 2018, she felt good about what she thought was a healthy choice. But by the weekend, she had stomach cramps and diarrhea, which grew more severe with each passing hour. By 11 p.m. that Saturday, the diarrhea had turned bloody, and it continued all night long. Around 6 a.m. Saturday, she and her husband, Kenneth, headed to the emergency room. Doctors gave her fluids, oxygen, and an antibiotic, but her symptoms didn't let up. It took doctors 3 days of testing and analyzing results to determine that Mrs. Graham was infected with E. coli 0157-87, a dangerous strain of the bacteria that produces a substance called Shiga toxin. Mrs. Graham, who was 72 and had been in good health, developed a form of kidney failure called hemolytic uremic syndrome, a side effect that occurs in 5 to 10% of the people who contract E. coli 0157-87. Doctors put her on dialysis to help her kidneys function properly again, but she's going in and out of consciousness during her 14-day hospital stay. Her husband, one of her daughters, and a granddaughter stayed by her bedside until she was fully conscious and able to recognize people around her. Then her husband said she had to relearn how to talk, how to walk, a rehab program that took about 2 months before she was back to normal. The culprit in Mrs. Graham's ordeal, the romaine lettuce in what seemingly innocuous garden salad. That spring, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration sent out multiple national alerts, eventually telling people not to eat romaine lettuce from the Yuma, Arizona area. Mrs. Graham, it turned out, was one of 240 people across 37 states in the United States that spring who government officials say became sick from tainted romaine. It was the largest national E. coli 157-87 outbreak in almost 20 years. Almost half of those infected were hospitalized, and 5 people from 4 states died. Then, right before Thanksgiving of that year, supermarkets and restaurants pulled romaine from their shelves and menus after federal officials announced another E. coli outbreak. Just as consumers thought perhaps the 2018 E. coli outbreaks were a distant traumatic memory, romaine-related illnesses returned in outbreaks starting in October of 2019 and continuing into December of 2019. 133 people were sickened. This was despite steps taken over the past 2 years by farmers and the FDA to identify the sources of the outbreaks. Consumer Reports is actively advocating for improved inspection and farming practices to better protect the lettuce food supply. We're also surveying Americans about their habits and working to debunk myths, including the perception that triple-washed packaged lettuce is always safe, when in fact the washing process doesn't remove all harmful bacteria. It's astonishing how frequently the lettuce-consuming public has been exposed to bacteria like E. coli over the years, said Bill Marler, a food safety lawyer in Seattle, who negotiated a settlement for Mrs. Graham. I have dozens of clients over the years whose lives have been completely upended, he said. They've needed kidney transplants and had hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical expenses because they chose to eat a presumably healthy food. In fact, between 2005 and 2006 and 2018, romaine and other leafy greens such as spinach and bags of spring mix have been involved in at least 46 multistate E. coli outbreaks, according to the CDC. Some research shows that the greens cause more cases of food poisoning than other foods, including beef. The constant drumbeat of romaine-related E. coli outbreaks has made Americans very worried about eating lettuce. In the 2019 Nationally Representative Consumer Report survey of 1,003 Americans, 52% admitted being concerned about getting sick from leafy greens, more than those who worried about poisoning from beef, chicken, or eggs. Sales of romaine, which until recently the most popular lettuce in the United States, are down in the wake of the 2018 outbreaks, dropping about $98 million in sales from their peak figure of 2017. Iceberg lettuce is now the number one seller. Meanwhile, lettuce growers have been trying where from farm to fork the potential deadly bacteria are finding their way into and onto lettuce leaves. How did leafy greens, nutrient-packed foods recommended by doctors and nutritionists alike, become so risky? And why is romaine linked to so many of these outbreaks? It comes down to the modern way we grow, harvest, and package our salad greens. There are many opportunities along the process from seed all the way to the consumer's plate, said Byrne Chapman, Ph.D., a professor of food safety extensive specialist at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Part of the reason greens in particular are so problematic is the sheer volume we're consuming. The leafy green industry ships about 130 million servings per day all year long, enough to supply a daily salad per day to nearly 40% of Americans, and almost a quarter of these greens being consumed as romaine lettuce. Perhaps more important, salad greens are almost always eaten raw, unlike burgers, eggs, flours, and many other foods that can be contaminated with pathogens but are usually cooked enough to kill any bacteria. You can destroy E. coli and other bacteria with enough heat, but few people are going to cook their lettuce, said James E. Rogers, Ph.D., Director of Food Safety at Consumer Reports. A food that doesn't have a final consumer kill step presents some extra challenges for food safety, says Matthew Wise, Ph.D., Deputy Chief of the Communicable Diseases Control Outbreak Response and Prevention Branch. That's probably the main driver among a number of factors that cause an outbreak, he said. We face a real dilemma of leafy greens, especially romaine lettuce, says Rogers. They're packed with nutrients, so we don't want to discourage people from eating them, but we can't ignore the fact that leafy greens are potentially risky, perhaps one of the more risky foods. But, he said, we need more answers on what's happening with greens sooner than later. The more needs to be done to determine the exact sources of contamination with this dangerous bacteria, he said. Once that's done, the FDA must set strict requirements for growers and processors, which will help prevent people from getting sick. And while the odds that you're getting sick from eating any single salad are low, Roger said, they're real. And when you hear about 200 or 300 or 100 people contacting a foodborne illness, it may not sound like that many, but for every case of food poisoning that's reported, there are many, many more cases that never got reported. In fact, according to the CDC, for every reported case of E. coli 015787 infection, there were probably 26 more that had not been reported. Once the greens grow to maturity, they're harvested by hand. Growers take samples of the greens to check for bacteria, but they don't check every leaf, which is why the bacteria sometimes slips through. 65% of Americans buy packaged greens that are taken from the field to processing plant, where tons of lettuce from many farms are mixed together. There, the lettuce is usually washed in water that contains chlorine or another sanitizer, then packaged and shipped to supermarkets and restaurants across the country. What do, those of we who like a salad with our meal? Perhaps we might wash our greens again. I have no answer to the questions that have been raised about salad greens. I will continue to enjoy my salad and take my chances. Not all news is good news. A day after Earth Fair announced it would close all of its stores, the North Carolina-based supermarket chain filed for bankruptcy. The Asheville-based grocery chain, which sells organic and natural foods, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization protection in U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Wilmington, Delaware. It listed liabilities from $100 million to $400 million and assets of $100 million to $400 million. The filing said a restructuring committee was formed in November to explore and evaluate the company's potential strategic alternatives, including the company's restructuring, reorganization, or sale. Company officials may enter into negotiations with any interested parties regarding a purchase of any or all of the company, the filing states. Earth Fair cited challenges in the retail food industry in announcing the store closing. All stores are expected to be closed by the end of February. Earth Fair operates in 10 states, including the Carolinas, Alabama, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, Florida, Indiana, and Virginia. It has 13 North Carolina stores, including one in Raleigh and one in Morrisville. The stores began closing sales just after the announcement. Each store will close once its inventory is sold out, company spokeswoman Jennifer Mercer told the NNO. Earth Fair has about 5,000 employees, including 900 in North Carolina. Do you like to go to a party? On Monday, February 24th, the Players Retreat celebrated its 69th birthday with hot dogs for a quarter and Budweiser at 35 cents. Players Retreat itself is a kind of time machine packed with North Carolina state and Raleigh nostalgia and countless memories of watching a city grow up around it. It's just a crazy idea we got in our heads, said Gus Guzzler. Let's celebrate the fact that the bar is still here. Situated near Hillsborough Street across from North Carolina State, the Players Retreat is Raleigh's most famous bar. It was founded by Bernie and Mickey Hanula and developed generations of faithful regular customers. Guzzler, a Raleigh attorney who worked there when in college, bought the bar in 2005 when it had fallen on hard times, largely just so it wouldn't close. I didn't want to see it go away, he said. I had no interest in running a restaurant bar. I just worked in kitchens to pay my way through school. It's a bit of a shock, but I couldn't handle the idea of closing. This isn't the first time the Players Retreat has offered pocket change deal for its birthday. Last year, they went through 1,600 hot dogs and 18 kegs of Budweiser. In its history, the Players Retreat has been the epicenter of political campaigns, fed writers and judges, and hosted countless NC State games, used originally on 15-inch TVs and now on flat screens. Years of development pressure has threatened the long-term future of Players Retreat. The Hillsborough Street corridor is redeveloping, adding restaurants, apartments, and hotels, with more changes looming. There are 5 years left on their lease, but Mr. Guzzler feels confident the bar will survive for decades. We have a great landlord. He's a dear friend of mine, Guzzler said, of building owner Thomas Carter, who owns the Oberlin Road block and several other adjacent properties. He loves the Players Retreat as much as I do. We've talked on a regular basis. We're going to figure this out between us. We haven't done a new lease, but it's going to happen. The Players Retreat is going to be there forever. Happy birthday. When you shop, do you use a self-checkout lane? Many U.S. retailers introduced self-checkout systems a decade ago, only to pull them out after customers revolted. Stores have embraced them again in recent years as they contend with a tight labor market and lost revenue from shoppers moving online, and as shoppers become more accustomed to interacting with technology instead of humans. It seems that shoppers aren't the only ones frustrated by checkout machines. Retailers are too. Walmart and Target are two of the many retailers who are adding thousands of self-checkout machines to U.S. stores to save money on labor as they spend more to staff new services like online delivery. But self-checkouts come with new and sometimes challenges as retailers try to curb theft, cut wait times, and keep customers happy. Despite the headaches, retailers still see added savings. Walmart and Target are adding more self-checkout machines every time a store is remodeled. Last month, Walmart opened its second U.S. store without any human cashier lanes. Costco Wholesale Corporation, which pulled back on a previous test of self-checkouts, has the devices in about 120 of its 646 U.S. stores. They plan to add them to 100 more stores, according to Chief Financial Officer Richard Galanti. These registers help Costco speed up checkout lanes and cut labor costs, Mr. Galanti said. The number of cashiers in the U.S. is likely to fall faster than overall retail workers because of advances in technology, predicts the Bureau of Labor Statistics website. Here's the big problem. Theft jumps when customers are empowered to scan their own purchases when they shop, according to industry research. Some theft is expected and often involves ticket switching or using the barcode of a more expensive item while scanning industry executives say. An example, a man said he accidentally walked out of a Kroger's with a case of bottled water he didn't scan. I was like, I'm not going to turn around, I'm just going to take it. He now intentionally misscans some items. I'm not going to fill up a basket with T-bone steaks. I'm going to steal some kale or other vegetables. He enters a code for the less expensive vegetable or a smaller quantity. He reasons that self-checking is annoying for shoppers and that this is restorative justice because of his own views about these companies' practices. Companies are now relying on cameras located in various places in the aisles of the store and at the checkout area. Walmart is using a data-gathering camera system made by Everseen Limited, a technology company based in Cork, Ireland. Walmart now has Everseen camera systems in more than 2,000 stores. The system uses cameras to track product and shopper movement. The example is cited of a person being stopped at a checkout and being shown a short video of him in the act of misscanning. My feelings about self-scanning is that I like to speak to a cashier. I like a human person to interact with when I pay my bill. I'm sure that with this method, even a very honest person could be tempted. Chef Vivian Howard, whom we have reported on her various television programs, restaurants, and other food-related stories, is taking a bit of Lenoir County to the Low Country. The North Carolina chef has announced plans for two new restaurants, but they won't be in her home state. They'll be in Charleston, South Carolina, one of the South's most popular dining cities. Howard plans to open Lenoir, a small casual restaurant named after her home county. Lenoir will serve dinner and weekend brunch. She will also open Handy and Hot, a bricks-and-mortar version of a bakery that currently operates as an online shop. Handy and Hot will be open for breakfast, serving pastries, biscuits, and hand pies, along with freshly pressed juices and a full coffee bar. I lived in Charleston some in college and have spent a bit of time there for festivals and events, and it's one of my favorite places, Miss Howard said in a telephone interview. It's near the ocean. It's this vibrant city with real cool dining scene. The restaurants are first reported by the Charleston-based magazine Gardens and Guns. This news comes as Howard is set to return to television March 27th with a new PBS show, Somewhere South, which will air Fridays nationally in prime time. More than a decade ago, Howard and her husband, Ben Knight, opened their restaurant, Chef and a Farmer, in Howard's hometown of Kinston in eastern North Carolina. The restaurant led to the acclaimed PBS documentary series, A Chef's Life, with director Cynthia Hill, which went on to earn numerous awards, including a Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Culinary Program in its five-season run. They also own The Boiler Room, an oyster bar in Kinston, and Benny's Big Time Pizza in Wilmington. The new Charleston restaurants will be in the Renaissance Hotel, located about a half a block off Charleston's bustling King Street of shops and restaurants in the city's historic district. Lenore will be a love letter to a restaurant to the farmers of eastern North Carolina. Charleston is home to numerous southern restaurants, but Howard said most serve the cuisine of the South Carolina Low Country. South Carolina has a deep history and restaurant culture, but most of the restaurants that define themselves as Southern serve low country cuisine like shrimp and grits, which is not necessarily the food I cook of the agricultural South, Miss Howard said. She said that the distinction makes her feel like she could add something to the city's dining scene without competing with what's already there. I'm not stepping on anyone's toes, not challenging anyone's cuisine. There's an open place to do what I do and add to the really tasty pie that is the Charleston restaurant scene. Lenore will have about 60 seats with a menu of a dozen or more small plates focusing on seasonal fruits, vegetables, and regional grains, with meat largely used as a condiment. There will also be a handful of larger dishes with an entire menu meant to be shared. For brunch on Sundays, the Lenore will offer a family-style fried chicken meal. A large 20-seat bar will be in the center of the dining room, and there will be a patio where Miss Howard sees future oyster roast. Much of her career has been spent exploring the region she grew up in through its land, its ingredients, its home cooks, and its farmers. She said her answer for where she comes from was never Deep Run or Kinston, but Lenore County. The restaurant's logo includes a simple tobacco leaf, the former gold of eastern North Carolina. Tobacco sticks will hang on the restaurant's walls along with a photo essay from the 1980s of her father's tobacco warehouse with farmers sitting on bales of cured leaves. Handy and Hot was initially planned to open in Kinston, but Miss Howard said Hurricane Florence made her rethink these plans. For nearly a year, she has sold cakes and pies online, but having a bricks and mortar shop was still what she said she wanted for the brand. Even though she's moving into the Charleston market, she said she's not leaving North Carolina. I'm not going anywhere, she said. My home and my first restaurant, children, a chef and a farmer in the boiler room are here. This serves to strengthen our restaurant group. We send our best wishes that her new enterprises are successful. What do you do when your business's sales drop and you make less profit? Kraft Heinz and other food makers are increasing their advertising after years of cost-cutting, recognizing a need to rekindle enthusiasm for their condiments, candies, and snacks. Kraft Heinz said additional spending was necessary to bolster its stronger products as shoppers have drifted toward lower-priced store brands and newer niche products. You need to nurture brands, take care of them to keep them meaningful after 150 years, said Chief Executive Miguel Patricio. Other food makers are also boosting marketing after years focusing on cost cuts that accelerated profits but crimped sales growth. Hershey Company, Kellogg Company, Unilever, SA, and makers of Oreos are spending more on advertisements and in-store promotions. That's how we connect with consumers and keep our brands relevant, said Hershey's CEO Michelle Buck. Hershey's advertising expenses in North America rose 5% in the fourth quarter and then ran a commercial for its Reese's Take 5 bar during this year's Super Bowl. Kellogg also bought ads during the Super Bowl for Pringles and Pop-Tarts, snack brands the company is counting on to help make up for tepid cereal sales. That's the big leagues, Steve Killian, Kellogg's chief executive, said, paying a very high price for the impact of a Super Bowl commercial. He said it was worth taking a temporary hit to profit if it fosters long-term sales potential. TV broadcaster Fox Corporation charges as much as $5.6 million for 30 seconds of advertising time during this year's National Football League Championship game. Some companies say they are paying for new marketing with cuts elsewhere. Unilever, maker of Hellmann's mayonnaise and Breyers ice cream, increased marketing spending by roughly $75 million last year. Chief Executive Alan Jope said the funds came from savings generated through zero-based budgeting, a method of aggressive cost management. At Kraft Heinz, the system stripped out nearly $2 billion after the merger of Kraft Foods and H.J. Heinz in 2015, but the company had fallen short of its sales goal. Last year, it reduced the value of some of its best-known brands by $17 billion. Mr. Patricio, who took over in June after the biggest write-off, is investing again, leading to lower profit margins for brands including Oscar Mayer Deli Meats and Philadelphia Cream Cheese. They also lowered the value of its Maxwell House coffee brand. The coffee has fared poorly amid the rise of high-end, trendy coffees and new flavors. Kraft Heinz also lost market share in cheese and cold cuts in the last quarter, while condiment sales remained strong. Mr. Patricio said Kraft Heinz would continue to spend on marketing for big brands that drive profitability. He didn't name those brands. Analysts expect Heinz condiments, think ketchup and mustard, Philadelphia cream cheese, and Planters nuts to be among the brands drawing increased investment. This year, Kraft Heinz is increasing spending on television ads and other consumer-oriented marketing by 30%. Mr. Patricio said he aims to make the company's supply chain more efficient and reduce the complexity of its sprawling operations to fund new investments. We could put the savings on the bottom line, but that's not what we want to do. We want to invest in our brands, he said. A seafood shack, the Angus Barn, and one of the South's most innovative kitchens are among the Triangle restaurants in the running for this year's James Beard Awards. The James Beard Foundation announced its long list, naming Senate finalists in its chef and restaurant categories. The organization's award considered the top prizes in the restaurant world, often compared to the film industry's Oscars. This year, several new restaurants and chefs are up for national award. Crystal Swenson of Crawford & Sons is running for outstanding pastry chef in the country. Ashley Christensen's wood-fired fine dining restaurant, Death and Taxes, is up for outstanding wine program under beverage director Cappy Pete. And the vulnerable Raleigh Steakhouse, the Angus Barn, is being considered for outstanding hospitality. A trio of Triangle chefs are semifinalists for the regional Best Chef Southeast. Stephen Devereaux Green of the Fine Dining Herons at Umstead, Chidi Kumar of Garland, and Ricky Moore of Saltbox Seafood Joint in Durham are up for this award. Other North Carolina semifinalists include Katie Button of Curate in Asheville, Greg Collier of Uptown Yoke in Charlotte. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. And this has been Bob Kruger reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.